I really expected the crowd to be down because, yeah, it. We left at 6. What's that?
There was a train when we were coming.
Yeah, 249's been closed since 2. Yeah, still closed. Yeah, the deputy was killed. Yeah, good to remember. Yes, yeah, there was someone escorting him was injured as well. So not a good day for local PD. That's some families to remember in your prayers. So anyway, I wondered if any of y'all would have trouble. Those of you who lived west would have trouble getting here because it took a while. It took a while to get home and to come back. So counting tonight, we have 4 sessions left. So the class is essentially 2/3 done, and I've been reflecting on that for the last few days. And the good part of that is that we really have addressed the 2 big things that I had in mind when we came in. I had 2 basic things I wanted to do. The first one was to kind of go back and remind us of our mission, and maybe even to develop our thought about our mission under our current circumstances. So we've worked from Matthew 28:19, where Jesus tells us to go make disciples of all the nations. And we thought about that responsibility in our time and some of the difficulties with an increasingly hostile world. So I want us to think about that. I wanted us to be stirred about that. And then the second thing that I wanted to do was to talk a little bit about strategy. And you know that I had 1 idea in mind about that especially. We talked about having a modest goal, which is throw stones at people. No, that would not be what the modest goal was. Though sometimes that is what we do. Put a stone in someone's shoe. When you go out and you talk to people, look for opportunities to join conversations and plant seeds, or maybe even give something that provokes their thinking a bit. And to do that, probably the most important thing I wanted to get you to think about in class was this idea of saying less and listening more, getting more information by doing what? Asking questions. We even threw out some suggested questions. Do you remember the categories we talked about? Yeah, just general information questions. I call them tell me more questions. I'd like to understand more what you think about that. What else? Last week we talked about leading questions, where maybe we have something we want them to see, a flaw in their thinking or a biblical truth. And so we try to think of some questions that will help them to discover that and see that. And one more. The burden of proof questions, remembering that in a conversation, whoever makes a truth claim, they're responsible to do what? To support it. Remember, the claim is the roof and the evidence is the walls. And when somebody puts up a roof, they got to have some walls underneath it. They got to provide evidence to prove that what they're saying is true. And too many times we let people off the hook and don't ask them in a kind way to do that. It's a learning opportunity for them. So the other point that we made about that is that for some of us, and maybe if we were being really honest about that, most of us, that is fundamental rewiring, isn't it? Because when we enter into conversations about spiritual things, what is our tendency? I'm going to tell them what is true. So it's truth claims or it's scripture references to prove to them that this is what is true. And though that may be instinctive for us, what's the downside of doing that, particularly in a world more hostile to what we believe? Who said that? Did y'all say shields up? Man, we need t-shirts that say that. Yeah, that tends to be what happens. People tend to get defensive, and we talked about how that messes everything up when we're trying to reach people. We're trying to keep them from getting defensive. Some of you have already shared with me, y'all have given this a try, and it just doesn't feel as natural. I hope you'll keep working on that and give me some feedback about it. Let me know how it works for you. So we've really accomplished the objectives I came in with. And so I'm I'm going to solicit feedback from you about where you would like to go next. I have something for tonight. I mean, we're not going to literally make it up as we go. And I have some other ideas for the three sessions after that. I would rather talk about things that would be useful to you. So let me give you two categories. Maybe you've encountered a question or a situation where you struggle to know how to respond or what to say. At times when I've had more time in the class, like 26 sessions, we've actually just devoted those sessions to working through specific scenarios that people were struggling with. If y'all have some, I'd be happy for you to share them with me, or just more broadly about evangelism, if there's some way we could help you to go make disciples, some category, topic that we could address. We've got three more sessions after tonight. I'd love for you to share that with me. So if you would ponder that, you don't have much time left, but I'm happy for you to help set the agenda about where we go, because we're doing this for you guys, to help equip all of us. And the best way we can serve our needs is to share about that. I do want to have a discussion tonight that was actually part of an earlier lesson, and we didn't get to it. And the more I pondered it over the last few days, I thought we really could do a session on this. And a lot of you have kids or grandkids, and it relates to kids. So I'm going to go ahead and throw this out tonight and see how it goes. You can let me know if you thought this was a useful session. I hope it is. I think that we need to take this strategy we've learned, being a good questioner, and teach our kids how to do this. Because we talk about being in a hostile world. What's that going to look like in 20 years? More hostile, you think? I love the pessimism in the room. Things are not going to get better. They're going to get worse. And you know, that's probably so, if we have to be honest about that. So the strategy, if it's helpful in a hostile world, will be even more useful for our kids. But I'm especially thinking tonight about how useful it will be for our kids in an academic setting to be armed with the strategies that we talked about. So an awful lot of our kids graduate and go off to A&M, right? Or the University of Texas. And some parents sadly let their children go to Texas Tech. I don't know what to say about that. Did I say that out loud? Sorry about that. So tell me why kids going off to college might need to have a strategy for talking to people. Beyond the obvious that they're supposed to share their faith. I know. But why, I guess what I'm really looking for is, why is an academic setting going to be especially difficult for our kids if they're going to be talking to people about Jesus? Oh, you're going to have to wave back over there, because I mean, you are not even in the peripheral vision, okay? Sorry about that. That's why nobody is behind you, okay? So yes, throw something at me or something.
So I was thinking, Two reasons. Okay. One on the spiritual side is academic settings are increasingly more and more atheistic and more, I don't want to use the word pessimistic, but anti-Christian.
Okay.
And so they lean a lot on previous authors and doubt the authenticity of the Bible and all of those things. They want to take spiritual things out of it and get down to humans. But the second part of that is because a lot of the things that they're going to be challenged with, not in sharing their faith, but what they're being bombarded with has no foundation at all and is based on logical fallacy. And so being able to question that will really till the soil, even if they're not the ones to spread the gospel.
Yeah, so there are just lots of things that kids will have to deal with academically on a college campus that will be in conflict with what they've always been taught. Simple thing. If your kid takes a biology class, what are they going to be taught? Yeah, they'll be taught that Darwinian evolution is proven fact, and only really nutty, ignorant, backward people think differently than that. If they take a philosophy class, they'll be taught moral relativism. I remember my son's very first college class. I mean, like freshman year, first day, first class, was an hour lecture from a philosophy professor on why marijuana ought to be legalized. And so he came home and shared that with me, and in my brain I thought, how much did I pay for him to go sit in that class today? And so that's the world we live in. And it isn't just what's in the class. Think about what we are hearing today about the dialogue among students on college campuses and the increased hostility toward a disciple's worldview on college campuses. So it's not just talking to professors, it's even talking to friends and things like that. Though professors can be a problem as well. We had a friend back in Huntsville that was taking a summer course, and she told us about the first class. She said that the professor came in and said, okay, if you're a Baptist or your Church of Christ, raise your hand. Which was an interesting question to start class, isn't it? And so he identified all the kids in class that were Baptist or Church of Christ. I know he's using Church of Christ wrong. That probably wasn't the sword to die on that day, the hill to die on that day. But anyway, identified those kids and said, my job is to destroy your faith this summer. Now, I don't think most college professors are that way. In fact, I'm less concerned about that guy because a young disciple is thinking, I got to go to war with this guy, as opposed to the guy who isn't hostile. He's just arguing the other way and being really nice about it and throwing a bunch of stuff at them they've never heard before. So we get into this academic setting where it's hostile to their faith and just on a lot of different fronts. Yeah.
From the kind of, I think going along with what you're saying, from the friend standpoint, you really have to, is with any of us, have a good arsenal of what you believe and knowing the scriptures and knowing how they tie together and the history of everything and having a good foundation and a good faith, because you're going to get there and your friends are going to challenge you. And if you don't have that faith, then it's going to possibly be, you know what, that does make sense. You know what, I do question if there's a God. I do question this, and that. And before you know it, that's the path they're on.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of different assaults from a lot of different directions. So let me ask you this question. When our little freshman goes off to UT and sits in her freshman biology class and the teacher begins to teach Darwinian evolution, what is it that we've told her is her responsibility as a disciple? What's she supposed to do in that setting?
Stand up for yourself.
Which means what in that class?
So you, I don't know what you're going for, but
Well, I know what I think. I'm interested in what you think.
What we've tried to tell our kids is, in a situation like that, like on a test or whatever, not that the professor cares, but to just say that I believe in creation. Like, this is the answer you're looking for.
But in the class itself, when there's conversation about, yeah, what are the kids? What do we tell our kids they're supposed to do? How come y'all aren't saying anything right now? What? Speak up. That's exactly right. In fact, sometimes what we do is we give them a couple of evidences that prove evolution is wrong. And you just go in that class and you just tell them there are no transitional forms and evolution can't be true. You tell that biology professor that, right? Have your Daniel moment, right? Daniel 1 and verse 8, where he stood up against all the other people who were going along with the king, or your Elijah moment, Elijah and the prophets of Baal. You be an Elijah in that moment, and you stand up, and you say what is right. By the way, how does that usually go?
Well, it's not even that. It's really, you probably, because you're going up against somebody has a lot more evidence than you do, and probably tears you to shreds and affects your faith much more than you stood up for your faith.
So in his book, Tactics, y'all have heard me recommend that book, right? He has a whole section that he entitles The Professor's Ploy, and he deals with this very issue. And when I first read this section, I'm thinking, that's not right. He's not saying the right thing, because here's what he said about that, telling a young college freshman to go into class and take on your professor on Darwinian evolution. He says it's right-hearted and wrong-headed. He says it's a tactical mistake. And so I thought, well, that's not right. We need our kids to be Elijahs, right? And so he went on to make his case, and I want to pitch this to you and ask you to think about this, because I found it actually pretty convincing. And John already tapped into what I think is the first problem, so I'll put it up there. He said, never make an assault on a frontal assault on a superior force. Right? You see that? Who's the superior force? Why? Oh, no, that's a different issue. Hold that thought. I'm coming back to that. Why?
Because he's literally studied his entire life.
Oh my goodness. The guy's got a PhD. How much does he know about the evidence for Darwinian evolution? Probably a lot if he's teaching at A&M or the University of Texas. Yes?
Well, he also has a captive audience of those that are eager to learn from him.
Yeah. Now, hold on. I want to say some more about that. I need to resist going down that path just yet. Hang with me a second. The other problem is that piece of evidence that we gave our kids
may not be right.
Or
he's already heard it
before, because our little freshman girl is not the first one to come to him from a church. And he's heard that before too. And so what has he been able to do?
He's planned ahead.
What's that?
He's planned ahead. He went into that situation knowing what he was going to do.
Yeah, exactly. He knew what her question was going to be or what her argument was going to be before she made it. He's ready for it. He has an answer for that. Does that make his answer right, by the way?
No.
It's very, very important to say that. In fact, it's a huge advantage when you know what somebody else is going to argue, you know what their evidence is going to be. It's such an advantage to already have formulated a response to that, right? And that's the position that he's in. So first of all, he is a superior force. Let me give you the second thing that taps into what some of the rest of you were saying, and that is the man with the microphone wins. What's his advantage in the class? Sorry?
He's
loud. He controls the conversation, and he can keep talking to himself.
Yeah, so this is John 9, right? When the blind man is healed and gets called before the Sanhedrin, and they're interrogating him, saying, come on, Jesus is a bad guy. He couldn't have healed you. What are you talking about? And I love his response here. The blind guy's beautiful. He's just a backward, poverty-stricken blind man who says, look, guys, I don't know. I'm blind. Now I see. You figure it out, right? Which is a compelling argument. So what do they do with him? Yeah, they kick him out. That's exactly right. John 9:34. They just say, put him out. Get rid of him. And that is exactly the position the professor is in the biology class. He runs a mic. You don't like what your kids say? He shuts them down. He's able to do that. So what does that mean for our kids sitting in that class? Now, that is disadvantaged in every way. This is a superior force, a far superior force, who is controlling the room. And what Kokel argues, and I think maybe there's some wisdom in this, is asking our kids to go take him on in a frontal assault is probably doomed for failure. In fact, I've heard the stories of kids who have tried this, Christians who've gone into the class. It doesn't go well, because it isn't just the teacher who attacks them. Who else attacks them? The class does. So.
Well, it's funny, you're requesting your student to do something you're ill-equipped to handle. I mean, you'd be just as shredded if you went in there and tried to do the same thing, because you don't know it either.
That's actually a great point, John. I'm glad you brought that up, because it's a nice little segue just to additional thought I want to add. Because the truth is, any of us may find us in our situation where we are dealing with a superior force. So not exactly parallel situations, but some similar situations. I had a friend who was at a leadership gathering for the top executives in this huge multinational corporation he worked for, about 100 of them in the room. And the CEO is getting up, addressing all of them, and explaining the new gay, lesbian, transgender policy that the company is now putting out there. And after presenting it, he starts going around the room and calling out people and says, "So, George, tell me what you think about the new policy." And my friend says, "I'm just sitting there thinking, I'm about to lose my job because he's going to ask me and I'm going to have to tell him." I've had some young people who have been in a similar situation, not with a professor, but with an older family member, like a teenager who becomes a Christian and mom and dad aren't. Think about that. Doesn't that kind of look like that same situation? Or maybe it's just dealing with a friend of yours who is really, really smart. So John is right. If I had to go talk to someone about evolution who had a PhD in biology, I'm going to be at a disadvantage in that conversation. I don't have that kind of education about that. I've read some about evolution, but I'm certainly not where he is. So is the answer then for us to just keep quiet? Keep quiet and make the grade. Put the answer he wants on the test and don't say anything. Just get through the semester. Yeah, I'm not comfortable with that either. So what Kokel actually recommended is a third option. So let's see if we can play out a scenario to illustrate how his option would actually work. So imagine that young freshman in a college biology class, and at the beginning of the class, the professor introduces the course, and in his introduction says, "We're going to be looking at what science says about the beginning of life. For all of you who were raised with the Genesis myth, we're going to be getting you out of the dark ages and enlighten you with the truth we find in science." By the way, can you see a statement being made like that in an academic setting today? Mm-hmm. Yeah?
That's exactly what happened in my first day of anthropology 101
college. So like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you had this exact situation.
Yesterday.
Exact
situation.
I don't mean to be unkind to Rick, but that does illustrate how long the problem has been a while, because it's been a couple of years since you were in school.
But I found out that's like tying into our earlier conversation. I asked a lot of questions about the walls because he was throwing a lot of roof out there. And I just, you know, well, tell me about the wall for that. Tell me about the wall for that. And when I got it, all the pieces that they could possibly give me, it strengthened my faith.
Yep.
Because the walls were not that strong.
So Rick was ahead of Kokel. You should have written the book. It's exactly where we're headed. So by the way, what do we typically tell a kid to say when a statement is made like that in his biology class?
"I believe in the account in Genesis."
Yes. Doesn't it sound something like, "Look, I'm a Christian and I believe Genesis is true." Right? Maybe a little more nuanced than that, but that's the gist of it. So the professor says the first thing, and the disciple speaks up and says the second thing, and I hope after 2 months of this, you can already spot at least one tactical error. There are actually two.
You're making a claim?
Okay, so first of all, yeah, what's the claim?
Genesis is true.
Genesis is true. And if the professor is a smart guy at all, and he probably is, what's his question going to be? And he may not be as nice about it as we may say just that. Put some walls under that roof. Okay, young college freshman, all your years of brilliance on this subject, give us some evidence that proves Genesis is true, right? And now who has the burden of proof? I do. She does. She made the claim. What other tactical error do you see in that approach?
Likewise, I would want him, I mean, if I'm basic, I would want it here, not 20 years ago, I would want him to prove why is he saying science is negating Genesis. I mean, what's your proof that science says that Genesis didn't happen?
It's a question.
Because I believe they go science.
Did the professor make a truth claim?
Yes.
What is it? Genesis is myth.
that was so that science can provide answers about things in the beginning when that's not the purpose of science.
Yeah, a whole other issue. Yeah, well, maybe we can find more than one truth claim that is up there. So following the tactics we've discussed in this class, what should someone do when a claim like that is made?
Ask questions.
That's interesting. How did you come?
Listen, it's just a claim. There are no walls underneath that roof.
It might not be a prime time to ask that question at this point because the professor is looking for somebody to say that.
Perhaps.
We had a couple days in class and he starts to present his evidence, question
the
evidence.
But for the sake of illustration, is there a question, think about this carefully, is there a question that could be asked about that statement that wouldn't necessarily raise the professor's defenses? What?
What is the Genesis myth?
What's that?
You ask him. What do you mean by the Genesis myth? Well, what is it?
That's kind of where my mind was leaning too, because there are all kinds of problems with putting the myth label on the Bible. That's actually a whole line of thought that you can follow, whether or not the Bible truly fits the definition of a myth. And so when somebody says that, that raises my curiosity. There's the question. Could you tell me more what you mean by myth? What kind of question is that? Now, that's an information question. I just want to understand a myth better, right? What do you mean when you use that question? What other kind of question could you ask there?
Possibly something about how can science know what occurred before we were around to observe it? What evidence is there that science can prove what happened?
How does science deal with the beginning?
Which myth do you believe about?
See, what's the problem with that question? Yeah, well, he knows, right? He knows. Again, the objective with our questions is to try to keep defenses down. Is that even more important than this setting? Why?
He holds the mic, he can just pass over it.
What's that?
He holds the mic, he can just pass over it.
Yeah, if he doesn't like what I'm asking, he can just ignore it. Why else is it even? What?
He doesn't want to be embarrassed.
Well, so I guess what I'm trying to pull out of you is, I don't want to show my cards in the first class.
You've got a semester.
Yeah. I want to be just a curious questioner, because if he begins to suspect I'm the Christian in the class, right, then that does raise his defenses. Let me ask you a question. How likely is it that a 19-year-old freshman is likely to be able to change the mind of a 70-year-old PhD? Pretty small, right? I don't mean to be pessimistic about PhDs. I work with one. But is that my only audience? I'm in a classroom full of people, and so maybe there's going to be an opportunity to put a stone in somebody else's shoe, and maybe there can be some conversations that will take place after class, outside of class, in a safer setting with others who may be like-minded or have more questions like I do. I think the role to encourage our kids to play in the class setting is to be a curious questioner, to come off that way rather than be adversarial, because you don't want to assault a superior force head on. Yeah.
We were watching, it was a true story, I cannot remember the name of it, and it was like an auditorium setting, and the professor got up, and the first thing he said is, there is no God, we're not going to even go that direction or talk about that. And he goes, so do any of y'all believe there is a God? You can see all the students coming around, and one young man raised his hand. And there looked like other people that wanted to, but he was very intimidating. And so after class, a couple of kids in the class came up and they said, well, we believe in God in the Bible. And at the end, these kids studied and prepared themselves. And at the very end, the professor ended up becoming a Christian. So, because other students that did believe in God, they studied and were ready to ask him questions.
That sounds like God is not dead.
Yes.
Seen that movie?
Yep.
What do you think?
A lot of tactical mistakes. Good ending.
You know, I watched that movie, and my concern with it is that it doesn't go that way, does it? It would be nice if we could all be open-minded and look at the evidence. I think the professor portrayed in that movie is spot on, at least initially, in his hostility toward Christianity. I doubt that where the movie departs from reality is where he's going to give the podium to a believer to present his evidence. I don't know that he's going to let that happen. Remember, the guy with the mic wins, right? He controls the room. And so that's interesting you brought that. I was actually thinking about that movie as I was preparing my notes today, and whether or not that would realistically ever happen in a college setting. I think the hostility is realistic. I don't think the opportunity to defend faith in the movie is. By the way, when a Christian asks a question, what's his responsibility?
Listen.
Yeah. He's gathering information. If I heard this in a class, I would want to ask, tell me what evidence led you to conclude that Genesis is a myth. I'm curious about that idea. One of two things will happen at that point. Either the professor will have thought about that and have some arguments to make, or maybe he hasn't. Because people throw the Genesis myth around all the time without even really understanding what mythology is and the problems with identifying the Bible as mythology. But it'd be an interesting question to hear how you would answer. So listen and collect data. For what purpose? Sorry?
So you can ask more
questions. Yeah, I want to understand his view better, to the possibility that I can ask more questions down the road. In fact, rather than giving our kids three pieces of evidences to drop in front of the professor in his first lecture in biology class, how about encouraging to think about some questions they could ask? What would be the right questions to ask here? What's going to come up? What could you ask about? Give them a list of questions to ask and teach them to do it with the right spirit and with the right attitude and not show their hand. And maybe have a chance to put a stone in somebody's shoe in the class. There's one other thing we ought to touch on, and that is the possibility of the professor picking up on what's going on. Could that happen? So think about this. When the kid asks for the evidence, the professor responds by saying, well, so I guess you're one of those Christians who believe that God made the world in 6 days. Why don't you tell us how that story fits the scientific data when all of it tells us the earth evolved over billions of years? What do you do if that happens? That's a mess. Hopefully not.
My first question would be, well, can you point me to this billions of things that you obviously have access to?
Shields up. There you go. And the war is on. You should probably just drop and pick it up with another professor.
I mean, nothing in the Bible ever, to my knowledge, ever states that the first day is a 24-hour period like we have.
Yeah, I'm not going to go down that road tonight. Good question. Different setting, we could talk about that. But what is the professor trying to do? Do y'all see it?
He's trying to transfer
what?
The burden of proof.
Yes, he's shifting the burden of proof, right? Do you see it? So, listen, don't take that bait. That's a trick. The right answer is to say, I haven't stated a position. I'm here to learn from you, your position. So I'm just interested in your evidence. You started to say something.
No, I think the biggest issue is he's trying to paint me as irrational, or yep, that I'm believing this fantasy. And you're like, hey, I'm not trying to get you sidetracked, professor. I'm just curious, how do you define a myth? And go back to my question, or you know, whatever it is. Because then that turns it in more of a less combative way. You know, it's just like, oh, well, I'm not trying to get in debate in the middle of class. I just asked you a question.
I wouldn't take the bait.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to pigeonhole me, and as you said, he's trying to shift the burden of proof. I'm not going to accept that. I haven't stated a position.
I'm here to hear about the scientific data. That's why I'm in the class.
That's why I'm asking. I'm just asking questions. That's exactly right. And so, by the way, that works anytime somebody plays the game of firing back with a question and trying to shift the burden of proof to you. Go back and just say, I haven't given a position. I'm not saying what my view is. I'm asking about yours. So can you see some value in this for kids? And if so, what is it? Is this better? Because when I first read this in Kochel's book, I was not sold. To me, it sounded kind of cowardly, like you're telling kids not to speak up. What do you think?
If they start defending and they get demolished, then it really does make them question.
Tell me what you mean.
You're not putting a stone in anyone's shoe by getting crushed by the professor in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Well, other than your own shoe. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's so that's one of the things that stirred my heart about this was the fact that it is extraordinarily unlikely that someone as youthful and inexperienced is going to be able to go to combat in that setting. You're doomed to failure, right? You're just not equipped to do that. And rather than opting for nothing, it seems to me this is a really great third option. Not to mention, we're gearing our kids, or gearing them up for, and giving them a strategy they can carry through them with all through their whole life and talking all kinds of situations. Yes?
Well, I think your point's good that they don't necessarily have a responsibility to go against the entire class and this professor. It's probably a whole lot more productive to be able to have individual conversations with their classmates, because you don't have the responsibility to go after that professor.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to say that providing a defense for your faith does not always just mean stating everything you have, because there's, you know, defense is a tactical move.
Yeah, that's exactly that phrase was in my head. Just as you said that, if I know I'm going against a superior force, and by the way, this might well apply to your good friend who's got a PhD in physics, and you're not really ready to argue physics with him, but you could certainly ask him some questions about his position. That seems to me to be a better tactical move than to try to go toe-to-toe in an arena where I just don't have the intelligence to argue physics with him. That's really what we're talking about. A college freshman can't argue biology with a PhD. But maybe they can ask some questions that will help other people in the room think, put a stone in somebody's shoe. What do you think? So I wanted to come back to that and suggest that if you got kids, if you have grandkids, because by the way, grandma can say anything, right? Great thing to work with them to develop. In fact, maybe a graduation gift would be great to pass on to your grandkids would be the book Tactics. So that your kids get to get thinking about how they're going to work in that academic setting and be able to talk, not be quiet, but be able to talk in a way that will be effective rather than getting them beat up in these really tough academic settings. Think about that. See if that will work for you. Remember, if you got something you want to recommend for our last three classes, I am really open to hear about that. Anything related to evangelism or a struggle you're having, we can talk about that, and we can work those into the last three sessions. Otherwise, you're stuck with what I come up with. Okay? All right. That's it. Thank you.